Oversight Committee meeting. We are excited to have 28 folks on the call, including three of our Bond Oversight Committee members this morning. We're going to go over quickly some of the traditional, or now what are becoming traditional, Zoom meeting rules as they were for participation. But there will be time at the end of the meeting for public comment. And so if you are interested in comments, Stacey, should they be reaching out through the chat for public testimony?
That should work, yes. We have time for public testimony set aside at the end of the meeting, and they can sign up in the chat if they would like to give testimony.
Wonderful. And so for most of the meeting, if you're not part of the presentation panel or the oversight committee, if you would be so kind as to hold your comments either to the chat or to the end for the public testimony, as Stacey said, you can let us know in the chat if you'd like to do that. With that, I will go over quickly the online meeting and protocol tips. So, first of all, if we can be patient and respectful of each other, please make sure that your speakers and microphone are working. Annalise, Susan, Alan, as you're the primary questioners today, it looks like Alan's off mute for a moment.
Good morning.
Morning.
And I'll say good morning, Susan Emmons.
Good morning. Please introduce yourself if you can before speaking. I should have done that myself. I am Shannon Callahan of the Portland Housing Bureau. And as we said, the chat will be open at the end of the public of the meeting. So with that, I think we can go right into the agenda this morning. And it's just nice to be here and see faces, even if they are in a little box. Also, for committee members, do you want to raise your hand if you want to interject, or are you fine? There's only three of you this morning. If you just want to unmute, and does that work for you? Just to unmute? I know, right? Perfect. I'm seeing one thumbs up, a real thumbs up, not a Zoom thumbs up. So I'm going to go with yes. All right. With that, we'll turn it over to Jill Chen.
Good morning, and thank you. I'm Jill Chen of the Portland Housing Bureau, and I'll just go quickly through the project dashboard and update. Next slide, please. There you go. And just wanted to let everyone know, so far everything is looking really well, progressing really well. Out of the 10 projects that are in pre-development, or we have only two that are still waiting for pre-development loans. That's the Joyce and the Prescott. And Joyce have already gotten approval. It's in documentation, and Prescott is now has applied for the pre-development loan and was just renamed as the Heyu Tilixum. We're also very excited because we will have projects going to close by the end of this year. As a matter of fact, in addition to our two projects that's not part of the bonds, we will have between 5 and 7 bond projects closing between November and sort of the first quarter 2021. And one of the first projects that will be closing is the project called 115th at Division. And this is going to be presented to you today. And they are targeting close November 2020. So it's very exciting. We will have units in production this year. It's very exciting. The second project that you'll see is an additional 40 unit expansion in one of the highest, I think it is the highest opportunity area of Laurelhurst and Kenton in the neighborhood. This is the Anna Mann project. That one is also very exciting. So you will see a couple of new projects, and we're just very pleased. And without further ado, I will send that to, I think, Mike Johnson, who's coming up next to talk about the bond issuance.
Good morning, everyone. Mike Johnson, the
Finance and Accounting Manager for the Bureau. First slide here, as you may or may not have heard, the city did issue the next chunk of bonds for the out of the housing general obligation bond, $164 million. Got a very good deal on the borrowing cost. It was less than 2%, substantially less than what the estimates that OMF Debt Management provided us. So that was a good thing. Sale of the bonds actually occurred on June 3rd, and the money's been in the bank since June 11th. And will be there earning interest until we start drawing funds for projects. So that means that to date, we have issued three different issues. So that's 2017A, 2019B, and this would be the 2020B issuance. So $217 million to date. So what that means is there will be another bond amount issued, at least one more, as we continue on with the process. Any questions on that bond sale? Okay, so we'll move along to the expenditure report. So that's primarily in the memo that we sent you, though we do have the very nice graph that Tanya does. Again, not much in the way of changes because we haven't really started construction on anything yet. We have done a number of pre-development loans. We do those pre-development loans out of another funding source because there is always the chance that a project might not move forward in the pre-development stage. We do not anticipate that, but out of an abundance of caution, we made the pre-development loans out of another source. So those aren't reflected in this report. We've had some additional costs in program delivery since the March numbers, so another 3 months of costs. However, we're not able to have the exact number on that because as of the night of July 8th, when I put this together, there are still transactions processing for year-end fiscal 1920. So when we do the next quarterly report, that'll not only reflect another 3 months of spending, but also some of the cleanup transactions for June 30th. So another change that's happened over 3 months is there's more interest on the bond proceeds that we had prior to the leftover funds from the 2019 issuance. So a little more interest there. This number is going to start expanding dramatically as we earn interest on $164 million. So then looking at the graph, really there's just been some minor changes, again, as we have made changes in the in both the interest credits really don't make a change. It's really just what we kind of call in the finance business decimal dust changes at this point. But as we start making disbursements on projects, these graph numbers will start changing more dramatically. So that's what I have. Any questions?
Hey, Mike, I have a question. I was actually just getting ready to type in the chat, but since you paused, I'll ask it if I might, if that's okay.
Sure.
It's a question about the timing of bond issuance. And can you tell us what are the driving factors? Is it the desire to have cash flow available from the bond, or is it also timing of the market, of the bond market and all that? I'm just curious as to how that gets driven.
Yes, both of those go into it. We want to make sure we do have funds available to start making draws. And as Jill noted, we may be making draws as early as December, perhaps January.
Okay.
So having the money in place for that, it does take about 6 weeks to turn a bond sale around. So we want to, you know, make sure we've given us enough time for that. Right now, in terms of where the market's at, we were extremely fortunate and picked a good week to sell bonds. If we'd sold the week before or the week after, those issuance costs may have been different, and the number of folks bidding on those bonds would have been different. So it's a really difficult market right now to try to judge when to do it. We OMF debt management picked a good week. The other thing that we, you know, want to make sure we're not doing is, sitting on a lot of bond proceeds, for too long. So as I mentioned, we're going to, we'll earn some interest as these bond funds go down. But for example, if we had done the entire issuance at once, we'd have, $260 some million sitting around just earning interest. And is that really the most efficient use of that money? So now that's the other thing that goes into the decision making is looking at a 2-year window, when do we expect to spend the money?
If I may interject, Alan, the city is a little bit more is sensitive to the fact that we once we issue these bonds, these start becoming a taxable event for the taxpayers of Portland, and we're very sensitive as a jurisdiction not to necessarily have to have taxpayers paying for something that is not yet coming into fruition. So that's a general policy of the city that's slightly different than some other local governments' policies and the way they look at these. And then, of course, the city is also, as Mike indicated, looking at we have a myriad of other funds that we're bonding as the city overall. So it fits largely into the some of the other thinking around what else is out there that the city is going for and timing in terms of parks. But OMF debt management did a great job with the sale, and we're very appreciative that they were able to hit this timing just right. And it's a lot of work from our finance team and as well as HIP team. And they also did an amazing job making sure that we were right on the money with what we needed to project for the next 2 years.
That's great. Very helpful. Thank you. Also a question for Jill about the dashboard, but I don't know if we're going to return to that or if others have questions.
Go ahead, Alan. We don't have a time to return to the dashboard, so we might as well talk about it now.
Okay. It was just a question I had. I wasn't sure if it's something we discussed before. It partly involves the 115 division on the matrix dashboard, which is super helpful. Also, for 115 division, it shows the population service focus as families rather than some of the other priority populations, immigrants, refugees, and communities of color. And with the location of that, I guess I'm curious why we wouldn't have the other priority populations there and how that gets determined. I don't remember if this is a conversation we've had before or not.
I think this was a conversation we may have had at the award letter level when we awarded them.
Okay.
But actually today,
they're here.
Let's hope they are here and you can ask them that question.
Okay.
And I think I saw them come in, so they're probably taking notes already.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. So if there are no questions on the project highlights or dashboard or expenditure reports, shall we continue on the presentations? If okay, then go ahead. I think I am up next. Tanya? Yeah. I think one of the things we wanted to just briefly update the Oversight Committee is about the impact of COVID-19. Next slide, please. And one of the things we as the Housing Bureau have already started working on is we developed 4 work groups to look at the impact of COVID in terms of the housing development, operational stabilization, and renter stabilization, and home ownership stabilization. And this is for both the long and short term. And today, I'll be talking about the affordable housing development because that's what is impacting the bonds, because our projects are not yet constructed. So we will be looking at the information I'll share with you today is really about what we're seeing in overall development from the developers, perspectives from the construction side, as well as the financing side. We have a final meeting to be held on project stabilization, and that will probably be happening in next month. Next slide, please. And the process for all of the work groups follows a similar process to talk about the needs assessments and then what is the feasibility. Essentially, what is it that PHB have in our control that we can help be it our projects or be it the residents or the clients, what can we do to help? And one of the other things we are really looking at is on the impacts. What is the long and short-term impact, the extent, but also how are we going to be addressing inequities and receiving feedback from the different work groups. Next slide, please. A summary of the first meeting we had was back in May with the housing developers, and they spoke about a number of areas where they had some concerns. There were some construction issues that relates to delays and permitting. There are some financing issues that relates to, say, senior debt and also tax credit pricing, concerns about the projects, both in sort of in their portfolio as well as those coming across. There have been concerns, especially about commercial. And as you all know, a number of our projects have commercial ground floor or maybe some mixed income. And there are some areas of that, there are some concerns. But there was also some upsides, potential for land banking, increased competition. So maybe pricing on some of the contracts and possibly some changes in policies that might be beneficial to affordable housing. Next slide, please. The next meeting we had was talking with contractors, subcontractors, and different business associations that was involved in the contracting business. So you can see, and I'm sorry, I didn't mention it earlier, the participants are on the left side, the takeaways are on the right side. One of the key takeaways that we heard from the contractors was keep the money flowing. And I should mention that we had takeaways that are focused on sort of general takeaways, and then another slide that focuses on the impact on equity, and especially on equity and contracting. So the first takeaway was keep the money flowing. All the contractors and subs and association were saying the feeling in the market was that the commercial construction was going to take a slowdown. And many of the contractors needed to have affordable housing in order to continue and having a stable business. So this was sort of keep the money going. There was also some sort of balancing that they needed between workers and issues about safety and sort of the construction schedule. There was a lack of PPE, supplies, all kinds of sort of issues about liabilities, safety protocols, the list goes on, you can see. There was some discussion about potential need for construction contingencies and the importance of having that built in so that workers and contractors could be safe. But there was also some shout outs that the folks made, especially to BDS with their technical solutions. This relates to inspections. The BDS folks were really great on that in terms of inspections and design review. Next slide, please. In terms of delving deeper into equity and contracting, as you know, for the bonds, we have a 30% DMWSB requirement or target. And that was something I think all the contractors realized. This COVID situation is really impacting especially the communities of color. And because of that too, they are also seeing it happening in the contracting world or the construction world. There was a talk about less established firms having no or smaller war chests because they're having a harder time withstanding the downturn. And a number of Black-owned businesses were just going out of business. So that was a major concern among many. There was also a desire for set-asides by certified firms, especially for those larger projects. So those projects where we have hundreds of units, maybe the smaller contractors can't do, say, drywall or windows for that many, but maybe they can do a smaller packets. There was also some questions about whether or not rehabs and preservation could be used for certified firms, although we have also seen that from the developer side, rehabs and preservation was actually harder to do because of the occupied residents. Another key, I think, observation was that there were fewer women on the job sites, and it's not just childcare for women, but for all participants, it was being impacted. So some things for us to consider, especially as we go and look at how could we mitigate the impact of COVID, especially on our DMWSB certified firms. Next slide, please. In the final group, we had last week, talked with affordable housing funders and investors. And across the board, there was conservative underwriting for loans and low-income housing tax credits. And this becomes very critical because, as you all know, when we sought the constitutional amendment for the production of units with this bond, we wanted to leverage the funds. And with the impact for our loans and our equity, that can impact how much we're going to be able to leverage. And we heard from our participants that capital was becoming more selective. There were some concerns that tax credit pricing, they all mentioned expecting tax credits to drop to about 96 cents instead of where things may have been. I think in our review of all of our projects, we are about 94, 95 cents on average when we awarded the projects. There was also some concerns that that commitments made by the investors were going to be okay if it was made in 2020 and we had signed term sheets. 2021 could be more of a concern. And some wait and see attitude as to where things happen and how the stabilization would work. There was also a concern about the impact for our BIPOC communities, especially those developers that are serving that BIPOC community, because the focus was going to be shifting from those with established, you can call it, track record and balance sheet. And as we all know, some of our developers focused on communities of color may not have a strong financial sense. So there was, you can call it some concerns, but also talking about some potential opportunities in looking at land banking. Somebody even mentioned you had A++ properties coming on the market, which we had not seen ever in the past. Next slide, please. So as I mentioned, I wanted to show this slide for you. It shows the history of tax credit pricing. And just to let you know, when we look at this little chart, the latest one was from 2015. But I know we have had more updated slides that show about right now, about 95 cents on the dollar. And we're seeing that history has shown that LIHTC is a little volatile. So we may come back and see some concerns or some questions about what are we as an institution going to be doing and to continue supporting our projects, especially in this light of the changes in tax credit pricing. So we're working with all of our partners and very supportive of them. And as you can see, Mike mentioned earlier in his expenditure report, we have already made a number of contingencies to make sure that we can support them. Questions for anybody?
Jill, can I just ask if you would clarify for the group what for instance, a decrease in tax credit pricing to the 2008 levels that we saw would mean in terms of our assumptions for what we thought we could leverage for tax credits on our bond project. So what kind of financial gap would that potentially create in some of our assumptions on the projects that are in process overall?
Sure. Thank you, Shannon. We ran some of the numbers and thought if it went down to about 90 cents on the dollar, it would be about a $6, $7 million additional request across all of our projects. So wanted to, you know, some of the projects had lower assumptions already. Some of the projects may already have commitments in terms of letters of interest. So we will have to work with each of the projects. Okay. So that gives you a range. Okay, thanks, Shannon. Any other questions? Alan, you look like you're ready to say something.
I have a whole bunch, but do any of the other committee members have questions?
I don't. I mean, I thought it was sad to hear that there are the minority contractors, some of them, and women might not be able to survive the COVID. I mean, just sad, but I don't have a question about it.
And Susan, just to,
okay.
We were talking and about the contractors, different ones said as much as a third to 40% of the contractors they knew were going into financial difficulties. So it is a major concern that we have.
And that is an area that's one of my questions. I know the city, as part of its, has passed a COVID-19 value statement around equity. And I think this is an area where it might reflect. You know, I think when very often we think about the impacts on communities that haven't had access to opportunity as much in the past, you know, we find that a lot of those opportunities right now are the last ones in the door, right? And so as we hit these crisis points, we know that those last ones in the door tends to be the first ones out the door in these moments. And so I hope it's something that we can pay attention to and figure out if there's any way for us to reverse that trend. And I think that's true in contracting as well as employment for the city, right? That tends to be the same dynamic that we see. I don't know that there's an answer to it, but I'm thankful for the city and other folks paying attention to it. I was also on the LIHTC credit pricing. This is maybe more information that we need, but my sense with LIHTC is that there's a correlation to, some type of correlation to LIHTC pricing, whether it's the economy or actually most likely, I think, tax related, right? What corporate tax rates basically are correlated potentially to LIHTC pricing. Do you know what pressures on LIHTC that we might be able to anticipate? And again, maybe that's not a question that we need to answer other than we just anticipate that there's gonna be a downward pressure on LIHTC pricing. And the other part of that question is if part of their funding set is LIHTC, it's not necessarily the Bureau's responsibility to make up that gap, right? It's, I mean, that's part of their funding stream in the project, not part of directly part of PHBs. Am I phrasing that right?
Well, there's two things. One is, you had two questions, right?
Yeah.
One is a downward pricing on LIHTC, and what are some of the factors affecting appetite? Yeah. What we saw last year was some really great pricing. We saw even, 100 cents on the dollar.
Wow.
I mean, that was really great. Actually, we even saw some that went over. So we knew that people were attracted to LIHTC because the market was good, they were making money, and they needed some kind of tax credit to offset those. So it was, I think, a good opportunity. We also saw a lot of, heard from our developer partners that when they went out to bid, they had multiple offers.
Okay.
So they could pick and choose. So these may be things where we're seeing the pricing may come down a little bit, but also the level of interest or the number of offers or the terms and conditions may change.
Okay.
That's the first one. So we don't know. There is a lot of uncertainty in the market. I think we all wish we had a crystal ball. And your question about, is it up to the Bureau to make up the gap? Normally we don't make up gaps, but I think the issue for us is we want affordable housing to essentially house the people that we know are, there's going to be more people out of this situation. There are more people coming out who need housing. And it's also going to be affecting, our communities of color more disproportionately. So we really want to get this out. So we've been working with our different developer partners on getting also their different sources of funding. And I should have mentioned earlier in my dashboard, we actually had two of our partners apply for OHCS Lift, and two of them got it. It was Stark Street, which got, I think, over, let me just get my notes here, $3.8 million, and Las Adelitas, who got more than $5.4 million. So we're helping them get the funding. We're also working with them, yay, to work with their numbers in terms of, can they value engineer? How can they work to mitigate the impact of pricing? Okay.
Yeah, because I do see it in our slides later with the two projects that it does list the funding sources. So that may be another opportunity for us to talk about how that mix comes in. And I do appreciate the Bureau's commitment to support the projects, given our overall goals. Definitely.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jill.
Yeah. And please, ask the hard questions to our developer partners. Okay.
And they're guests, so they might get a pass.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, if not, then I will hand it over to Tanya and introduce Anna Mann, and go for it. I guess, Anna, Tanya, do you want me to make the introductions?
Hi, it's Tanya. Yeah, you can make the introductions. I also, we're a little bit ahead of schedule by a couple minutes. I also wanted to maybe you could take this opportunity to go back. Dr. Holt is with us. We have some kind of administrative items from our last meeting notes that we may want to go through those process steps before we get started on project teams.
Well, I think we should take advantage. Hi, everybody, by the way. Was with you on one instrument, but my webcam doesn't work with that one. So I was trying to get in on the iPad so you could actually see and hear me. And was having a challenge with that, but hello. Technology is great when it works. Thanks, Shannon, for opening up. You sounded and operated with just keen efficiency, getting the meeting up and going. So thank you very much for covering that. There are a few things that we do need to cover. We did not go over and approve meeting minutes from our last meeting. So we'll take a moment to do that. I trust that everyone's had a chance to look those over. And were there any questions from our last meeting by any of the Oversight Committee?
I Susan Emmons, reviewed them and they looked fine to me. The meeting notes from the last meeting.
Excellent. Well, if everyone is okay with the approval of those minutes from the last meeting, if you will indicate so by, and in this environment, you can simply do a thumbs up, and I think we'd be okay with that. Perfect, 100% approved for the meeting minutes. We did our check-in to make sure that all all the members of the Oversight Committee that are present have identified themselves. Todd Struble is not able to make the meeting, and he did indicate that he would not be here for that. Let's see if there's anything else that we needed to cover. I think Shannon did a great job identifying, of course, how if you've got comments or questions, please use the chat function to do so, to engage in that way for those who are guests in the meeting. Now, I normally say that this is a meeting that's open to the public while not a public meeting, which simply means that this is the meeting of the Bond Oversight Committee. And the agenda is what we will follow. Provided you have other questions and or concerns or things you want to weigh in on, please feel free to contact Portland Housing Bureau directly. Tanya, was there anything else that we needed to tap into?
I believe that is the bulk of our business items. So we'll just kind of come around again at the end for any folks who have indicated that they want to have public testimony. Otherwise, I think we're ready to hear from our two project teams, unless others have something else they'd like to address.
Well, let's go. Project team updates. I don't know, Tanya or Jill, are you doing the introductions?
This is Tanya again. I can do the introductions. Yeah, we're really excited to have two of our bond awarded project teams coming to give us some updates. We're going to start things off with the project team for the Anna Mann House. So I believe most of the folks from Innovative Housing are with us. So I will hand it over to them to introduce themselves and walk through their presentation.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting us to be with you today. Can everybody hear me okay? Great. Much appreciated. My name is Julie Garver. I'm Housing Development Director for Innovative Housing. With us today, we also have Carolyn O'Doherty, who is a project developer and our financial guru for Innovative Housing projects, and also Leah Cooper, who is Director of Housing Operations, and so they'll be chiming in on a few of the slides and available to answer questions as well. So we're starting out with a picture of our property. We are still just kind of pinching ourselves to know that we got this property and that we were awarded funds. It's an amazing property. The more that we dig into it with the team, the more impressed we are at how the previous owners of the buildings were good caretakers and how this land will really benefit vulnerable populations into the future. So we continue to be really thrilled with the property. Next slide, please. So our unit mix has remained consistent percentage-wise while we were able to add the south building and the additional 40 units. And so the unit mix and income restrictions are depicted on the slide. For our service partners, we have Innovative Housing that is providing some of the PSH and resident services. We are partnering with IRCO, the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization, as well as Luchtdorf. And our priority communities, of course, families, communities of color, immigrants, refugees, and individuals experience homelessness or risk of homelessness. Next slide. Carolyn is going to jump in and talk with us about funding sources.
Hi, so the funding sources are pretty straightforward. They're all funds sources that we have used in the past besides, well, except obviously the bonds, but we have worked with PHB a lot in the past. So we have a good partnership with them. We are using both low-income housing tax credits and historic tax credits, since that's a historic building. And the main other source that we're using is a private first mortgage. And then we're getting a little bit of energy funding in the project. There was some talk before this about tax credit pricing. We have partnered with KeyBank. We were lucky enough to get an LOI from them before COVID. We did a competitive LOI process and they were far and away the best partner for us to work with. They offered us really strong terms. And I can tell you, Sarah and I between us have talked to them three times in the last few months to check in and make sure that they are still gonna hold their pricing. And they have repeatedly assured us that they will. I had a conversation a week or so ago with a different investor who we have no relationship with and just got her feedback on the market. And she reassured me and also said that direct investors that she has seen are continuing to hold pricing. They are dropping back and not investing in any new projects, which is part of the reason the pricing market is softening because there's just less people out there. But I feel fairly confident that these sources are going to stay. I also feel like we have a little bit of cushion in these sources. I have been fairly conservative on what the interest rates are going to be. Right now, the rates that I'm using are above what current rates are, but rates are at such historic lows, I didn't want to count on them getting lower, but I am optimistic that they'll remain lower than what I have projected, and we may be able to increase the senior debt a little bit if we need to any more funding along the way. I'm happy to answer questions, but that's my main blob. So let's move on to the next slide.
Okay, talking a little bit about development progress, our team has been working consistently. Special thanks to Masai at PHB. She's been really helpful in helping us move through the process and navigate the steps that we need to do and just being part of the team and giving her input. So we appreciate that. And so the architects have been working through design development phase. We completed our tree survey and we are gonna be able to save a significant amount of trees, especially the larger tree. We had a team meeting earlier this morning and the team reported that they were able to come up with a very unique structural system for one small portion of the south building that takes the pressure off of one of our very large trees on site. And so we were very excited to hear about that. And we are excited about the addition of the south building, the 40 more units, and you know, give our appreciation to staff and the committee for adding that. It'll allow the project to increase its number of people served and also the strength and stability of the project. And then we're exploring some creative partnerships for resident gardening and dance yoga classes for children. And Leah from our office can talk a little bit more about that.
Good morning, everyone. It's early days in our developing these the programming aspects. But our idea is to have a gardening program that will promote healthy eating. So our residents will be working in the garden and then taking fresh fruits and vegetables back to their units. And, you know, the project is so unique that it has a lot of space for cooking and cooking classes. And so we're really excited about that. There's also some unique spaces in the building for us to be able to have dance classes and yoga classes, and we're really hoping to tie that with our relationship with ERCO so that these are, you know, culturally responsive classes so that we can, you know, meet the needs of all of our residents. So,
great, thank you. Next slide. So, a couple of material changes. And the one you're probably familiar with, the zoning change increased the density on the property. from a single family zoning to RM1, which allowed us to, was the trigger for allowing us to include the 40 units and then the addition and funding of the 40 units to the project. So those have been the major changes. The minor changes are just normal things that happen in the course of development. We're working with a partner that is adjacent to us, who's building a senior living facility along Sandy. And so we're cooperatively working together on property line issues and things that they need and things that we need. And so that conversation's going well. Next slide, please. So our DMWSB update, we are working on contracting with our mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and fire sprinkler right now. And this is a great opportunity to include more certified participation. And we've done things like Jill was mentioning earlier about splitting scopes so that there can be more participation. And so that split has mainly focused on having the new buildings in one scope and the old buildings in another scope. And it allows for people with different skill sets, and it's going to bump up our participation. So we're definitely on track for, you know, the 70% to 80% MEP certified participation, and then the on track for 30% for the entire project. We are working with architect and contractor now, planning our extended outreach programs, working with, you know, who to get involved to be most effective on making sure that our outreach is targeted and effective and thorough. And we will be having early meetings for certified subs prior to the bid period opening. So we're looking at, you know, early fall timeframe for some of those meetings. And that gives time for certified subs to come and meet the general contractor and also look for assistance if there's any assistance needed in preparing bids, and then also plenty of time to do extended outreach. Next slide, please. So issues and challenges, they're pretty normal that come up during building investigation. We do need to replace a sewer line that's inside the existing building under the floor of the basement. It's in a pretty good place to do that. The good news is that the exterior sewer lines are in good shape. We did a major investigation at sewer scope, and so it's good news that those can be reused. And then we're working with PBOT on our driveways. There were existing driveways to the site. They were fairly narrow, and they're different. Today's street standards are different. And so we're working with PBOT to see what we can do to both meet their requirements and also preserve the trees. Some of them are on site, some of them are street trees, but we really want to preserve as many trees as we can. So we're working through that issue. Next slide, please. Leah, this is Leah's slide to talk about.
Sure. So we have developed a partnership with ERCO. I mean, we have a longstanding partnership with them, but we've developed an MOU to see referrals for priority referrals, rather, for the units at Anaman. And we hope to be speaking with them a lot during the planning and design portions in which we can, so we can be, you know, designing programming around our spaces as much as possible. We're also working with Luckdorf. Specifically, we have an MOU to work with our PSH units, develop a relationship with Luckdorf to provide comprehensive case management for families that are looking for mental health and drug and addiction services. So we'll be working with both those agencies quite a bit as we develop programming. And then IHI will be staffing the PSH positions. So we will have two full-time service staff in the building. One will be working specifically with the PSH units, the 12 PSH units, developing comprehensive services with those families and starting working with them at the application point. We found at our other projects that starting work very early on in the process is helpful. And then the resident service coordinator will do the work of all of our resident service coordinators, which is stabilization, eviction prevention, referrals, resources, and working very closely with the community. We're aware that as these residents settle into the community, it will be a new area for a lot of them, and that will present some challenges. So we're hoping to develop really good relationships with the community around the project.
The one other thing that's on this slide that we're going to be working toward is working with some existing residents on getting some feedback about outdoor amenities and community space. Leah, you want to speak just a little bit more about that?
Yeah, the building and the land that it's on is a really unique space, and so we wanted to be sure that we have some feedback on specifically around safety and issues like that. So working with them about lighting and safety concerns, and also talking to them about what kind of things they want on the project. So what are our playgrounds gonna look like? What are the lawns gonna look like? What kind of amenities can we offer that really meet the needs of the community rather than just assuming that our community would want a certain thing? We really hope to get some feedback so the place feels very welcoming and livable and useful to everyone.
Great, thank you. Next slide, please. Okay, so that's our presentation. We're happy to answer questions if you have any questions for us.
Hi, Julie, Carolyn, and Leah. This is Jill. Thank you so much for your presentation. I see in the group chat that Alan had a question about, are there any, with the addition of the historic tax credits funding and the historic destination, are there any additional requirements that might present barriers to development?
Well, we have utilized historic tax credits on several projects in the past, and so we know what to look out for, and we have a consultant that's on board to help us through the historic tax credit process as well. It's going to align very closely with the city landmarks process that we need to go through, which is, as you know, similar to design review. And so we've already gone through our design advice request hearing feedback. We got that feedback from the Landmarks Commission, and they provided positive feedback about the property to us. They like the south building. They like that it's gonna buffer the original Landmarks building from the parking area. They like that we're going to be saving so many trees. They provided positive feedback on the exterior materials and design of the new buildings. So we were, you know, cautiously optimistic about Landmark's initial feedback. We've also had a preliminary SHPO review, and that was through Masai sort of shepherded that for us through the environmental review process. And their comments were also positive. They asked some questions about a couple of areas, which is not unusual. We're continuing to design some of the historic areas. The historic entry to the building is a little awkward. It's had a lot of changes over the years, and so we'll be working through those issues to satisfy Landmarks and SHPO and the National Park Service. So there are issues that we'll work through as design continues, but it isn't materially different than we would need to do with design review. And so we'll continue to work through that process, and I'm sure we'll have an update in a few months on our next chance to speak with you.
And Alan, this is Jill again. I'll just add that in response also to your question, PHB have a number of projects that have successfully closed, actually also with IHI and others that include historic tax credits. So it normally has not impeded the development. It's actually been helpful to get the additional tax credit. So the amount of funds that PHB is providing is reduced.
Great, thank you.
I had a question, Susan Emmons, one of the bond oversight. I just thought your presentation was wonderful. You have such a great track record in the community. I loved what you said about involving the residents as you think about, like, what is the playground going to look like? I think you do such great work, and it's so well thought out. And I was thrilled about the extra units when I heard about them. You might not be able to answer this, but when do you think you might be opening the building? Is that hard to say, like 2022?
Carolyn, what's our lease-up schedule looking like? You're on mute.
So we're going to start construction probably in March. I believe it's now a 24-month schedule with the new units.
18, 19 months.
So we'll be done. Okay, so it's 2021. Yeah, so we have a 6-month lease up because it's such a long project. So we'll be leasing up in end of 22, 23.
And thank you, Susan, so much for your comments. We really appreciate it. And we feel really privileged to be able to work on this project.
You all may not know this, but we're actually moved our offices into the building. Because we can socially distance beautifully. And so we're, I think, more bonded to this building than we've been to any other building in our portfolio, because a number of us spend most of our day there now. And it's, as Julie says, it's a real privilege.
It's a temporary move of our office space to socially distance, but also to really be able to provide a little bit of security for the building, because it's a large property. And we wanted people to see that there was activity there every day, and so it sort of met a couple of different challenges for us. But it is super nice to be there, and people are going to really enjoy living there.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions from the Oversight Committee? Annalise? No? All right. Excellent. Then we will go to, I think, the next group of presenters.
This is Tanya.
Jill, did you want to make an Tanya?
Yeah, this is okay. Tanya, really quickly. I just want to make, I believe we have most of our project team folks with us for 115th and Division. I think I saw them come in, so I will hand it over to our project team for this project from Related Northwest and Central City Concern.
Ryan, you're on mute. There you go.
I'm sorry about that. Can you guys hear me now?
Yes.
Great. Just wanted to say it is such a pleasure to see the Ann Mann House start to work. I remember touring that building, and it's so beautiful, and you guys are doing such a great job. So what a pleasure to be following that presentation. I'm with Related Northwest. I'm here with Stephanie Condor with Related Northwest and Mary Rain with Central City Concern, and we're going to kind of give you guys an overview and update on our 115th and Division Street project, which we're incredibly excited about. If you want to jump to the next slide. So this project is a kind of a joint venture with Related Northwest and Central City Concern as the co-developer. We've got the other partners involved are also Boys and Girls Club, which we'll go into in a little bit on their involvement. We're really excited about, and ERCO as well. if you want to go to the next slide. So our priority communities are families, communities of color, immigrants and refugees, and individuals experiencing homelessness or at risk of homelessness. And we've got our unit mix up here. And as you can see, we've got about 33% of the units are going to be restricted at 30% AMI or below. And 7 of those units are permanent supportive housing units as well. The rest of the project, it's 100% affordable. The rest of the units will be restricted at 60% AMI. And half of the units are family-sized, meaning they're 2 or 3 bedrooms. So we are anticipating estimated number of people housed is going to be around 343. Next slide, please.
Oh, and we want to mention that we have 7 units that are PSH units.
Yep. Right. Right. Yep. And we've got our funding sources here, along with a beautiful picture of the interior courtyard. So this is a 4% tax credit deal. So, you know, with the Portland housing bonds, we've got the 4% tax credit equity that we're estimating at about $12 million. We are anticipating senior debt of roughly $7.4 million. We've got an award from OHCS from their gap funding for $1.2 million. And we're anticipating some OHCS MEP also for about $100,000. So total development costs we're estimating right now at about $39.5 million. And then our note below, so we're leveraging our Portland bond funds by about 2.5 times. And I guess while we're on this slide, just a quick informational piece on the building here. It's kind of in a crescent shape. What you see is the courtyard, which is going to be nicely landscaped, obviously, and we've got a playground that we're putting in there. And it's going to be, it leads right into the Boys and Girls Club space. We're going to be doing an after school program from the Boys and Girls Club, who are going to run programming for school-aged children of the community. We're just a block away from the elementary school here, so we're really excited. This is kind of a one-of-a-kind, and the first time we're doing this, and we're incredibly excited about the partnership there.
Yeah.
And next slide, please.
Can I add a couple things? So this joint venture is with Central City Concern, Boys and Girls Club, and IRCO. And, you know, as Ryan mentioned, Boys and Girls Club, this will be kind of the first of this type of project in the Portland metro area, where we're co-locating Boys and Girls Club within an affordable housing project. And I sit on the board of Boys and Girls Club for the Portland area. And just hearing about some of the challenges they have to keep their large clubs going, this is a solution to help them reach a demographic that is very commensurate to who they're serving in the community, and alleviate some of the operational hurdles that they have. So we thought this might be a great way to kind of, you know, assist the residents here, which, you know, are folks that struggle with, you know, after school care. By co-locating it. And like Ryan said, what's nice is there's an elementary school, they can walk to grocery, there's rapid transit on this Division Street corridor. There's all kinds of stuff on 122nd Division that's just quick walking distance. So we're really thrilled about the location and the amenities that we're able to provide for these residents. And I just wanted to give a shout out for that, because that's, I think, one of the most notable things about this community, besides the fact that it's looking really good. So.
Right, thanks, Steph. Okay, development progress. So we are currently in for our building permit. We submitted in May. I think we're anticipating our first plan check comments, I think in about a week or a week and a half. And we're scheduled to close right now on late October, 2020. So right around the corner, we're going out to bid with our general contractor just at the end of this month. And then project highlights. So obviously, you know, we're 100% affordable family development with supportive services provided by Central City Concern, who's going to be providing the bulk of the resident services on site, as well as case management for the PSH units. Boys and Girls Club will be doing their administering their after school programs, and IRCO will also be involved offering programs, outreach, and educational opportunities as well. So upcoming milestones. Going out to bid, getting pricing in July. We've got our debt and equity partners selected. We're starting our closing calls, and things are rapidly approaching a fall close. We're anticipating about an 18-month construction period. So hoping to open our doors and start leasing up in April 2022. And next slide, please. So in terms of DMW ESB SDF updates, our latest pricing exercise, we're on target for 31%. We are working with Walsh Construction Company, who really is committed and has dedicated a lot of time, energy, and effort into developing programs to really assist with helping their subcontractors kind of get on board and developing a wide network of minority contractors. So we're excited about that. I think we're going to hopefully blow the goal out of the water. And on our soft costs as well, we've got a 20% aspirational goal. We're closer right now to about 35 or 40% really on our project soft costs as well. Again, we've got some great relationships with folks, and Ankrum Moisson is our lead architect, and many of our subs are going to be falling into that category. So we're really excited about blowing that goal out of the water as well. Next slide, please. So issues and challenges, you know, I think there's a little bit of uncertainty with BDS permit review timeframe, you know, given the furloughs, the current impact, people working remote. I will say, though, people over there have been fantastic, really prioritizing these projects. And we just recently closed our Cedar Commons project with Central City Concern as well. And we, you know, the reviewers made it through. We got the permit in time. I think it's incredible the amount of work that they're doing given these certain times. So we feel like we can overcome that one. It's just a little bit of an uncertainty. And then I think, you know, the COVID environment in general, impacts on construction, timeframe, things like that. We are doing some things to help mitigate that in terms of, you know, negotiating additional timeframes and grace periods with our equity investors, extensions on loan terms, just in case, and negotiating additional things in perhaps the agreements like, you know, larger allowances for stored materials and things like that to help mitigate that. So.
No, and can I add a couple things? Also, it's about
production. Sure.
So with respect to BDS permitting, you know, Ryan's been doing a good job working with Ankrum and the city to kind of track and benchmark the progress to make sure that we're hitting, you know, during our plan checks and everything, just to be really mindful that we're hitting our dates as we're going along. So I think it's just about more focused project management to usher that through and be very proactive. So I think that's one thing. And then with respect to just the COVID environment and construction, you know, I think, you know, most folks know on this call, and if not, you know, Walsh is one of, I think, the strongest, if not the strongest, contractor for affordable housing in the area. And I think they've done a great job with their responsiveness around COVID, about planning and logistics and just having a good work plan. And, you know, we've got kind of this ability to see ahead in the future by our Cedar Commons, AKA small division that just recently closed, and worked through some of those logistics. And so we're actually getting the opportunity for this project to do best practices, lessons learned, and be even more proactive than we have been on small division. So I think all of those bode really well to mitigate any of these types of COVID related risks that we're seeing out there. But again, I think it's two part. It's proactive, you know, planning, project management. And then the third is what Ryan alluded to, is making sure on our investor and debt end that we are putting into place some cushion in the event that there are delays, because, you know, you plan life and then life plans you a little. So we're trying to head it off on all three arenas. So I just wanted to share that's kind of the way we've been pursuing this.
Thanks, Steph. Next slide, please. So in terms of community engagement, we've been pretty active here. We've reached out to multiple neighborhood associations out in the East Portland area. We've done a presentation to East Portland Action Plan and had great response and a lot of support from those folks and the neighborhood associations. We did host an outreach meeting in which we encouraged community feedback on design. And we had a pretty good turnout for that. And again, had nothing but positive response from community members, people excited, people ready to refer their friends and family. I think people are really going to see a tremendous, are seeing this is going to be a great asset to the local community. You know, we've posted a development notice site out on site. We've already gotten calls, and most of them have been like prospective folks wanting to lease an apartment. So people are already kind of gearing up for that. And that's been probably the highlights of our community engagement. Next slide, please.
Oh, and then we've also had discussions and spoken with a Division Midway group that is out there. And we will be working with the David Douglas School District. I have relationships from former projects that we've worked on. And so that's another piece. And then, of course, the local Boys and Girls Club that's out on Rockwood on 185th and Stark, you know, in conversation with them because they're also in this deal. So trying to make sure that we're casting a wide net out there and letting folks know.
Right. Great. Thank you. Yeah, we'd like to open it up for any questions that anybody has.
We also have Mary Rain on with Central City Concern. I don't know, Mary Rain, if you wanted to add any comments about the partnership or, you know, your contribution to our project. It might be nice to hear a couple words from you. You always say great things.
Hi, can you all see me and hear me?
Can't see you. Let me see if I can see you.
It says my video is going. But if at a minimum you can hear me, that's success. So thanks, Steph, for opening it up here for a minute. We're just so incredibly excited to be partnering once again with Related Northwest. As was mentioned, this project is directly next door to our Cedar Commons project, which just broke ground. So we're really building up this community out on 115th and really looking forward to how this is going to bring increased amenities and services and most importantly affordable housing to that part of East Portland. So just a few points on CCC's role in the project. We are a co-developer and our primary role beyond that is the services provision for the project. So we have a full-time resident services coordinator that will be providing overall resident services for all of the units, all 138 units. So that will be you know, community events, resource and referral, eviction prevention, employment assistance, making sure folks are connected to healthcare, all of those core stabilization services that are so essential. And, you know, that CCC has our 40 years of experience of providing. And then in addition to that, we have a 0.8 FTE for the 7 permanent supportive housing units. So that position will be providing the more intensive, really daily case management to those households and families to make sure that they are receiving all of the wraparound support that they need to be successful in their new community. So with that, happy to answer any questions related to services. And thank you so much.
Thanks, Mary Rain.
Dr. Holt, I just had a question for the project team. Actually, one is a comment. This is Alan Lazo from the Bond Oversight Committee. One is, I think you've obviously answered the question I had earlier about the matrix that PHB has and with regard to the priority communities. So thanks for that. It's, I think it's just the matrix doesn't list everybody that you've listed there and the engagement you're doing. But I'm also curious about, Steph, you said that, I'm curious if there's a formal joint venture with ERCO and Boys and Girls Club, mm-hmm. where they are actually equity partners in the project?
No, so Central City Concern is our nonprofit partner in the deal, so there is an equity piece for them. Boys and Girls Club, we are covering all of the expense of having their staff there and covering, you know, we don't charge any rent and we don't charge the residents any fees and we cover for their staffing, but there's not an ownership stake, we'll say. They're not really set up for that. And then with respect to ERCO, no, we have them, we will be giving them a stipend for outreach. And then as the PSH kind of forms, because it will be through coordinated access, that's when we're going to try to connect them with services. We had a great long conversation with them in Central City Concern just recently to kind of start firming up and developing what that service model is. They're really excited. This actually was, this community is a response to a community engagement meeting that I did years ago out there. And I think Shannon was out there at the time. And I was so impressed with ERCO, and they really did a great job of expressing the needs of the residents out in that community, that this project was born from that. So it's kind of neat to be able to say, look how far we've been able to take it. And we listened. You know, a big thing was we want large bedroom units. So we're doing a lot of three bedrooms. We want more amenity space. After school care is a huge problem. So we were really trying to be like, okay, here are all the things that we heard you say. Is this what it looks like? And they're like, yeah. So they're excited to be a part of it.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, I just thought it was curious, that terminology in connection with those two groups. I thought, oh, wow, that would be really neat and unique if they had equity stakes in a JV. So
thanks. Yeah. Any other questions?
Any other questions from the Oversight Committee? Annalise, you've said nothing today. We haven't heard your voice.
No, I'm good. This was a wonderful presentation. I really appreciate it. I appreciate hearing from both of you, and it's really great to see the projects that we saw on paper in concept starting to really, you know, hit the ground running. So that's wonderful to see, and thank you.
Thank you very much, Annalise. Susan?
It was a very thorough presentation. I had questions along the way that were answered. So yeah, good job. And I think it's exciting. And I love the fact that you're developing something that's so needed and that you've known that, the history. It was interesting to hear the history behind it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. I would weigh in by saying that for both groups, one of the things that's so important at this very moment, as highlighted in the report, with so many sub-consultants and smaller contractors being impacted by COVID, I appreciated hearing the commitment around equity and the commitment to the numbers. That's extremely important and valuable in this time. So commend you to that. Director Callahan, was there anything that you wanted to say? I saw you unmute inside on the ship.
You know, all I was going to say is actually to the Bond Oversight Committee, the meeting that Steph is actually talking about where she was able to network and create the partnership with ERCO was your meeting. It was the community engagement meeting that we had back 2 years ago before we started the bond solicitation process, not quite 2 years ago, but where we brought community together to the table and talked about what people were wanting to see and what kind of partnerships we wanted to create. And it was actually at one of those tables that staff was able to connect with some folks from ERCO and hear about what the community was desiring and create that partnership. So I just wanted to put a little shout out to you for the community meetings that you were able to hold. And I look forward to the day when we are able to do a in-person meeting with community partners. But I think it also makes me think that we're going to be in this space for a while. And so I will work with our team to see if there's a way we can figure out how to do a more virtual meeting of this type to see if we can keep that kind of engagement going on with the Bond Oversight Committee. Because I think these partnerships that you're helping foster and create through your work are making obviously a really meaningful difference in how these buildings are going to operate for the people and community members that will get to live in them. So I just wanted to appreciate you for that meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. We do have space for public testimony. I did not see any people signed up for such. Stacy, did we have anyone sign up for public testimony?
No, we did not.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for everyone being with us. I think at this point, we'll begin our wrap up. Our next meeting is scheduled for October, and I look forward to the continued great work. You have it right there. It is October 1st, where we will be gathered in this Zoom platform kind of context. I guess by then some of us will be pretty proficient at it. Again, I apologize. Technical difficulties this morning. Technology is great when it works. And for whatever reason, I could not get the iPad to participate. So here we are. We were able to manage it. Until we meet again, appreciate your work. Take care of yourselves. Everybody stay safe. All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks, all.
Thank you. Yeah.